Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for joining us here in this fantastic windowless conference room. Beautiful sunny Gold Coast, beautiful November day, great beach out there. My name's Alistair Spears. I'm a senior operations PM in the office team. And it's great to be back here at the Gold Coast. I work over in Seattle, as you can tell from my accent. Australian, been there a while, so I'm starting to say weird words. But it's kind of interesting to be back here. Every year we've been back here, and it's like 2008, we were just talking about, was when we first demoed the beta of what we called BPOS at the time, our Business Productivity Online Suite, or what we affectionately call the big piece of software. we didn't call it software back then. But it's amazing how much that's evolved. Like that room had about 10 people in it, so it's kind of almost surreal to see so many people here. And now, you know, Office 365 has grown from just like a beta to a multi-billion dollar business for Microsoft now. It's where we do all of our innovation and all the work we're doing. So I'm here today with Ben and Marissa, and I'll let them chime in before we jump into sessions.
Ladies first.
Marissa Salazar, I'm a product manager on the Office team. And I am here mostly to give a culturally diverse perspective as the American in the room, as well as to plug my fast track session, what's happening on Thursday. So you'll be hearing from me a lot more about that.
And I'm Ben Walters. I'm also a product marketing manager on the Office team. I deal with all the stuff we do on stage, all our big announcements, all those kind of things. So I get to play with all the new tech, which is why we have Surface Books and Surface Pro 4s and those kind of things up here. And I'll be showing you some of how we make this new wave of innovation for Office real and things that are actually there and working and get access to today.
And it's our job really to make sure that Ben's demo fails. So all of you send your like negative vibes into the Surface Books and the Surface Pros down here. They have this nice reflective bad thought soaking up area that'll make the demo work great. Millennials. Who in the room is a millennial? Anyone? Show of hands, high hands.
Who wants to admit it? Who knows what a millennial is?
It's a very large spanning generation.
It is. It's kind of weird. And you know, we've been talking a lot about millennials in the office, about how we think about the next generation of productivity. What do we build for the workers of today? You know, what do they need and the people entering the workforce now? And a lot of the time we use this term millennial. And generally the term millennial is used by people over 50, maybe 60 years of age because it's such a very broad term. It defines like a whole two decades of people there.
It's also more socially acceptable than young whippersnapper.
That's right. So. Yeah, depends. I'm a millennial. I was born in 81 back in the day, and millennial for me was a bit different. You know, I grew up in the country, so we didn't even have TV, let alone phones, had CB radios and those sorts of things. We did get computers eventually, but it was all bulletin board systems and trading cattle online and those sorts of things back in the 80s. But my first phone was a Nokia 5110, the turn of the millennium. It's actually coming down here to Schoolies back in 1999. I think that starts next weekend, so if anyone wants to hang around, it's, yeah. But that was the start. You know, I had a mobile phone before I had a car, and the mobile phone was kind of my life back then. Had all my people in it, SMS, I was very good with like T9 inputs.
Could play Snake for 3 days straight and not lose battery.
And the things are indestructible. I mean, who's still got an old Nokia phone from that generation? 5110, what's the 63 one, the one you could drop in a beer and it would still work 3 days later? Yeah, but it's just amazing how far that technology has come as well. And that's kind of one of those defining things that when we talk about millennials, we're really talking about that generation that grew up with mobile phones, that work with mobile phones, that think in second nature about mobile phones. One of the other defining characteristics that we see is around collaborating early and often.
That's right. And like much like Al, I'm also a millennial. I'm 82, so I'm one of the, I think Al and I fit into this like strange gap of kids who never grew up with computers, but you know, got into them just in time so we knew what was going on, but not so early as to have a whole bunch of embarrassing photos on Facebook and those kind of things. So very, very, you know, special group. And when I think about my experience, and it's probably something more recently in the way I worked, I moved over to Redmond myself about 12 months ago, a bit over 12 months ago. And when I got my job offer to move, I had literally laid a slab for a new house. And then the decision was, do I keep this house, keep building? Do I try and build a house from another country? Which, if you think about that back in the 80s or 70s, just wouldn't happen. Like, you'd be doing stuff by carrier pigeon, trying to confirm plans and make sure things were working. Whereas now, I actually managed to build a house from nothing but a slab up to, you know, something that we're looking to rent now, using, you know, just email, using photos, confirming that the right colors were put in, confirming everything had gone in the way it had happened, and collaborating with people across the entire country, or across the entire globe, sorry, from America back to Australia to be able to get my house built. And that whole collaboration experience is something that, to me, just kind of felt natural. It's like, why would I stop doing what I was doing? I just continued to do that. And as I said, you know, I've been... throughout that, I posted all this information on my, you know, Facebook and Twitter and those kind of things, so I knew what was going on, but never grew up with it, never knew what it was like to grow up in that space, and something I think Marissa actually had a great experience with.
I am what you might call a true millennial, not like Alistair and Ben, who like to think that, you know.
We're cool. Yeah.
But Ben's going to pull up this video that actually shows how, you know, I've been with Microsoft for 5 years, but Microsoft Office, Windows, this might not be a Windows machine that I'm working on, but this is an actual video of me at 4 years old, and it gives you a great idea of how long technology has been in this generation's lives.
Full disclosure, cuteness warning ahead.
What are you doing today?
Computers.
Is this your summer school class?
Yeah.
How are you doing in it?
Good.
Is it fun?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the programs you like to do?
I just started one, I don't know what it is, Kid Picks. I always do that one. This one.
Click it open, let's see what happens.
So the video goes on, but it really does just give you, first of all, feel free to say aw, or how cute you were, Marissa. That's fine. Aw, thank you. It just gives you a great idea about how long technology has been a huge overarching presence in the generation that's entering the workforce's lives. It's nothing new. We all have embarrassing photos on Facebook. We were using Twitter all through school. If we flip back here, I think I've also given myself another opportunity to talk more about myself. This is me in, I think, late middle school, early high school, on Facebook. I think the comment is really the kicker here. Marissa's first time on Facebook, and she's already hooked. This was the first time that I used Skype, which was lovely captured in a screenshot. But if you look closely, you can see my grandmother was so excited to talk to me virtually, her being in Los Angeles, me being in San Diego, 2 hours away. So not too revolutionary, but she pulled out her digital camera to take a picture of the special moment. This is a screen capture. I was trying to explain that to them. I don't think it was really getting through. This is funny. SharePoint has been in my life just as long as anything else has. In college, my friends and I dressed up for Halloween as our school's SharePoint site. This is where we were accessing our classes. This is how we talked to our professors. This is how I actually communicated with my school throughout the entirety of my education. It was very important to me, obviously. And today, Twitter is how, you know, myself and my colleagues and my peers, this is how we access the news. This is how we figure out what's going on in real time. So it's not just thinking about technology as a thing to help you do your job. It's thinking about how technology has shaped people's lives and how it's more than just a work enabler. It's really your entire life.
Any more embarrassing shots?
Maybe later.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting from Office 365 as well. We've focused so much over the last 5 years as we've built out Office 365 to really focus on the economics of the cloud, making it cheaper and cheaper, faster and more storage and more capabilities and those sorts of things. And now we're kind of revisiting that. We're coming back and looking at what is that productivity experience? What is the core thing? Where do you go to after a 50 gig mailbox? We can add it to 100, 200, 500. But is that really something that's going to redefine productivity and help people adapt? And really now we're looking at this kind of shift in the way people work, this shift away from this kind of static approach to these dynamic, self-forming networks. Information scarcity, moving away from the scarcity of information and moving into a way where anyone can discover information. Almost everything you do, everything you buy now is tracked, is sending data, signals, is essentially metadata that can be collected and analyzed. And how do you take that, you know, has a huge potential for to be a problem and a privacy invasion, but how do you turn that around and make that useful to you? Useful as a productive person. Can you harvest all that information that your watch is generating, your phone is generating, your email is generating, and how do you turn that to good? How do you make use of that data rather than just become a product of that data and being like an advertising eyeball and those sorts of things as well? We've seen a huge change around how we define productivity, away from your value to the organization is what you do, to the value of you to the organization being about what you share, what you create, and what you invest in others. And really that kind of changes how we look at intelligence across the board, from machine learning, using some of these aspects to kind of draw connections between these silos. And it's a huge kind of change in what we've seen as well. So we think about these things and think about these at Microsoft, and we shared some of this in the keynote, but really we kind of divide these things into these three big areas that we look at investing in. We think about building for teams and networks rather than just personal productivity now. How do we draw those lines together and make people more efficient and more effective when they work together? How we start focusing those personal insights. The amount of information that you have in your inbox, in your calendar, is essentially casting this kind of digital shadow or this digital silhouette of all the things that you interact with today. Whether it's the email, whether it's your calendar, whether it's how you log in and check in and tweet and all those sorts of things. But technology has this capability of really building this interesting kind of silhouette of who you are, what you do, the connections that you have. And how do we kind of use that data to make more insightful insightful insights? That's a horrible way of saying that. But how do we make the data more insightful as we track into that? And finally, security. And security is something that we've all been focused for quite some time. But the problem with security is it's never really been looked at as a user level. Security has always been the kind of enemy of the user, right? It was things that got in your way that blocked you from doing your job. How do we turn that around? How do we make security an actual productivity feature that allows you to collaborate easier, to warn you when certain things are happening that you don't want them to happen, and those sorts of things. So this is how we see kind of the market shifting and the technology shifting as well.
And when you think about insights and security as well, a big part of it is the Big Brother concept and getting end users comfortable with the fact that just because we're collecting insights and analytics from the things that are going on in your organization and at a personal level, it's not the Big Brother that we're all thinking of and that we read about, for many years. But then again, on the same page, you're thinking about security, and there is somebody watching, and we do need to keep track about what's going on in our organization. So we have to really keep the end users in mind there and getting them comfortable with this new way of the world.
Yeah. We talk about this as kind of the cool, creepy line. There's all sorts of features you can build that are kind of above the line and below the line of that cool, creepy factor. When you think about things that are kind of by nature cool features, the cool feature is things that make your job easier, your day easier, things that make it easier for you. Really, the equation has to be you're getting more out of the system you're using than perhaps that system is taking from you and it's benefiting other people. So it's kind of this selfish idea that I'm okay with a system using my data, using my information, if I benefit from it, but if other people are benefiting from it and I'm not, you kind of drop into that creepy line. It feels weird, it feels like advertising, it feels like something that you're doing for someone else. And that's really what we focus on when we're looking at that. We'll show some demos of that. So we've talked a lot, Ben. You're the demo guy. Make this real for us. Show us how this works.
See how we go. And we want number 7. And so actually, one of the great examples on that kind of cool, creepy line as well is Cortana. How many people have used Cortana in Windows 10, played around with it? How many people have seen a little pop-up that comes up from Cortana and says, I noticed you've got a package coming. Would you like me to track this for you? Yeah? And it's great, it's cool, it's really helpful, but then you think to yourself, how does she know about that? And so one of the things that we did to kind of target that, or the Windows team did, was to actually give information on how Cortana got that insight. And so that's how we look at, making that not as creepy. Now, I'm going to start, first of all, today looking at another, I guess, intelligence system that we've built within Office 365, and that is Delve. And Delve is looking at taking all of those signals that we use and we do day-to-day. Think of the signals you take day-to-day in something like Facebook, and the things that Facebook presents to you. All you really want to see is the most recent list of items on your Facebook, but Facebook takes all of the things you like and the things you look at and gives you a customized and curated feed. And Delve is very similar. the signals it takes is different, because the signals it takes actually sit within the organization. And there's signals like, who do I work with? What projects do I work on? What documents do I work on? What people do I respond to in my email? Who do I respond to quickly? Who do I respond to slowly? And uses that and runs it through machine learning and what we call the office graph to help bring me insights around information in the organization. And so you can see here, this is my Delve up and running, and I've got information coming here all from all across my organization. So I've got documents coming from SharePoint, from document centers. I've got a site here from called Domestic Sales, Operations. And while everything here at the moment is sitting within my 365 environment, I also have the option to extend this. We announced back at Dreamforce a couple of months back now that we have extensibility and add-ins for things like Salesforce data coming in here as well, or CRM. So it's not just about documents and those and, you know, those kind of artifacts, but also line of business systems, being able to post into the office graph and give me insights and bring information to me without me having to search for things. And this is just one of the ways that we're looking to try and make Office smarter and help drive those insights for you. Now, all of this information is obviously based around content. I want to get a more personal view, though, and one of the experiences that we'll be shipping later this year is a new experience called Delve Analytics. And Delve Analytics takes a lens on that information that's being collected by the Office Graph and can start to give me insights about the way I work. And so what I can see here is a list of information around what I've been doing day to day. I can see how I'm spending my time in meetings, what I'm doing based on external meetings versus internal meetings. I can get information on how I'm spending my time across the day. You can see I'm spending time, I'm spending 59% of my time in meetings, 24% of my time in email, and 17% of time on focus time, which is actually working on tasks and doing things that are maybe not potentially, you know, interacting with people. I can also see that I'm spending time outside of business hours working as well. So I can see that I'm really starting to put in the, you know, burn the midnight oil and put time in on that. And it's not just about how I'm spending my time, but also who I'm working with. So I can get information here on who I'm connected with and the top connections within the organization. I can see that, you know, I send a lot of emails to Nancy. I get a lot of emails from Nancy Anderson. I can see who I'm connected with. I can also see who's responding to my emails and who's not. And this is really interesting because it helps me find out who in the organization I'm working with most, and the people that are really valuable in my network within the organization. I also have things like my network velocity, how I'm adding to that, and probably more importantly, who I can connect with in my organization, all being brought to me from the office graph, from the insights that it's driving on the way I work. And things like this are really important when you think about an organization the size of Microsoft. We have 45,000 people in Redmond alone, is it?
About that.
About that. So finding the right person to get a task done is actually, you know, can sometimes be a challenge. Usually the way you find that person is by, you know, saying, hey, Marissa, who can help me out with, you know, X task? And she'll turn around and tell you the person she knows, and it all kind of cascades from there. Whereas what I'm getting here is information on who I'm losing touch with and who I should reconnect with. And so that's actually bringing information to me, making it really easy for me to gain those insights. And these are the things we're doing when we think about how do I deal with all that information coming to me and how do I drive insights out of that without having to spend a whole bunch of time mining data. Now, I'm going to switch gears a little bit.
This is interesting because it kind of shows you all this stuff you could do already if you were the Exchange admin, right? You could run logs and you could look through this stuff. Doing it as the Exchange admin, creepy. But exposing it to the user and seeing your own individual data in this sort of form is actually cool. Like, now we can actually see who we're working with most, where our time sinks are, how we're structuring our day. And you can imagine over time, you can use things like machine learning, statistical analysis to actually recommend courses of action, recommend whether you should decline meetings or accept meetings, recommend who should be on meetings about particular topics. All this can be done inside of the office graph. And so this is just kind of it's touching the surface of this stuff as well. It's really exciting.
And the great thing about the approach here is that it really lands with users because it's the same concept as a Fitbit or a band, and it tracks your sleep and it tracks your exercise and it makes recommendations off of that. So it's not a big jump. It's kind of a step in the right direction also might help people get more comfortable with the idea of org analytics and how is my team working together and do I want to expose that to anybody but myself. So it's a step in the right direction.
Okay. So let's look at how we actually then drive networks and working together with people out of that as well. I'm going to switch over machines, and I'm actually going to go and bring up, get my mouse working there. I'm going to bring up Word. And this is Word 2016 that we officially launched on September 22nd. And what I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to go and open a doc, and I might get Al or Marissa to come help me on this one as well, whoever decides they want to go and be my co-auth buddy. Anything that comes up on screen, I am not responsible for. I'm going to go and open up this Fabricam future printing proposal. Now, this document's sitting in Office 365. It's actually sitting all the way over in the US, and we'll see how the network that they've given us for this event is going to hold up. Turns out pretty well. And you'll notice a couple of things as I've gone into that document. I've been given a note letting me know that Alistair is editing this with me. I've also been given a bookmark to take me right back to where I was working. So it's not just about, you know, collaborating with others, but also getting back to where I was working quickly and easily. You probably want to go up a paragraph. See if that works again. There he is. We can see Al's come and join me in that document. And you'll notice as Al's typing, I'm seeing things in real time here. This is our real-time typing feature of Word 2016. Now, Al's just, you know, going in and putting in some stuff. Beautiful. This is good. Good thing is, I'm pretty sure if I come to here, I can just... No, I can't. It's going to lock me out of it. but the beauty is here is that as we go through, you know, historically, this is something that would have taken a bit of back and forth. I would have had to go and make some edits. Al would make some edits. I would make some, you know, save, get those edits back. And really start to, you know, have this asynchronous kind of collaboration, whereas now it's real time and really speeds up the time it takes me to work with Alistair. We've also found in Microsoft especially, when we start to think about sharing documents and working with people, we're no longer in this point of saying, I have to finish my piece before I can share with Alistair or let him work on it. We can actually work in real time and actually start to get things going much quicker. Now, because we are in a world where things are networked a lot more, if I click on this shared dialogue in the top corner, I can also get more details on who is exactly in that document and what they're doing. And right from here, I can actually go and scale this up from just a, you know, from a collaboration in a document up to a Skype meeting. And so I can actually come up to here and, you know, scale this up to an IM chat, maybe a video call, right here from within Office. Now I'm going to go and actually start up a video call here, and we'll see if Elle will pick that up.
Do I decline?
No, I don't decline. Now the beauty is that as I decide to go back to my document, you notice that Al's video continues to hover. So we can still have this conversation one-on-one. It's not obtrusive. I can actually go and move this around as I need to. But because I have this integration back into what I'm doing, it's really easy for me to continue to work with Alistair on the document and collaborate in real time. I don't have to worry about, crap, did I leave my video on? Am I looking the wrong way? Am I doing the wrong thing? I know exactly what's happening right there. And of course, once I'm done, it's very easy for me to go and hang that up. But these are the integrations that we look at bringing people together to work more effectively in teams and networks and help people really start to get to a more collaborative space quicker.
So what we've seen there is kind of interesting from a point of just a feature function point of view. In the past, you know, we've got something like 4,000 features in the core Office authoring apps, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, the classics. But something like this, just being able to share something and have Office take care of assigning SharePoint permissions, assigning OneDrive permissions, sending out notifications, understanding status and those sorts of things, is a lot of like plumbing between the products. Yep. And so more and more, these products are less about a standalone Word app, a standalone Excel app, and really a service overall. I was actually using that whole thing through the web. So we were doing all of that interaction just through the web app as well, which we could have done on any device.
It's also a small note, but I think worth mentioning, with that vast amount of features that Alistair was mentioning, you'll notice where this shows up. It's not in the backstage. It's not hidden in the ribbon somewhere crazy. It's right there in the forefront because we're all about changing the way people work, and people aren't going to change the way they work if something's difficult to find. So a small note, but extremely important.
Now, if we think about, you know, the feature-rich nature of the Office applications, there is usually a lot of things that can... sometimes be hard to find. I know there are times when I've seen, you know, people use a certain feature in PowerPoint, maybe find something in Word. Maybe tracking down that feature is not always my forte in remembering where things are. But this is, I guess, where we start to think about how does Office work for you and how does Office make it easy for you to get your job done. And with that, we bought one of the features that we had within Word Online initially and brought it to all the Office applications on the desktop, which is Tell Me. And this is where I can ask just natural language questions of the application and get functionality back. So if I come into here and say, you know, how do I create a table? And you'll notice that I've put in a question the way I'd normally ask a question. And what's been returned here is a list of options for me. First of all, you'll notice that it knows that the feature I want is add table, not create table. Even though I said create table, it actually knows, well, what you're talking about is adding a table into your document. And you'll also notice that it hasn't returned a link to Clippy. It hasn't returned a link off to the web to tell me how to get it in the ribbon. It's returned the function. So I can very easily go right into here and with a click of a button go and add that table right into my document. And I can do this with any feature within the Office product suite. So it doesn't matter what I'm looking for, if I'm looking to do a mail merge, doesn't matter what it happens to be, it's simple as me just asking the question of the application and getting the functionality back. Again, making it much easier for me to get that, get my job done, rather than spending time trying to hunt through on how to use certain features. Now, as we think about, you know, the way Office helps us day in, day out, I'm going to switch over to Excel here and start to have a quick look at some of the things we've done around Excel. Now, Excel is still the number one data analysis application on the market. You'll be surprised how many times you know, certain people think they can get away without it. Finance is the people who usually tell you they can't. And you'll also be surprised about how many times people spend a lot of hours creating new charts and graphs. And one of the things we did in 2016 was to actually make sure that we had new ways of representing data. Visualization is key to the way people gain insights from information. It helps us, you know, get information at a glance. It helps us see what's happening. And with Excel 2016, we actually put in 6 new visualizations in total that help you represent your data in better ways. Things like this waterfall graph here, which is really great for being able to show profit and loss statements. We also have things around tree maps, which help represent hierarchical data. These are things that historically you'd be doing in a pivot table, spending a lot of time putting pivot table data into there and doing that. Whereas here, it's really easy for me to be able to go through and see a breakdown of my data in there. I can also, if I want to, if I have the board telling me they need something that's a little bit more pie-ish, because the board always likes a pie graph, I can always go and convert this over to a sunburst as well, and still have that hierarchical data represented in a way that's easy for me to process visually, and all at the click of a button, just very simply. Now, the last one I want to show you in Excel is the forecast data sheet. And this is something that if you're in sales and you're working on how do I, you know, what's my forecast for the next 12 months, this is going to be something that'll be, you know, really, really useful for you. But I have here a bunch of monthly revenue for my last 3 or 4 years. And what I want to do is actually forecast out my 2015 sales. And so with my data in there, I'm simply going to go and hit forecast data sheet. And what Excel is doing is taking my historical data and running some algorithms in the background to then go and project out what my next year's sales looks like based on the information that I had historically.
So it's basically making it up.
Pretty much.
Right.
Pretty much. No, it's using much more in-depth, what would we say it was, a linear? Come on, Marissa. Give us our statistical thing here.
The good thing about this type of data and this type of forecasting is it is a science. You know, it's not an exact science because it's forecasting, but it uses statistical analysis to and uses actual regression and progression formulas to create this statistical model. It's not something that would have been changed by any type of human interaction. It just would have taken a heck of a lot longer.
We'd have taken a calculator and lots more Excel graphs to get this done, right? Let's be honest. But the beauty is it's doing it with a click of a button. I have an upper and median bound of where our trust levels are, and also what looks like the median of my forecast there. And so it's really easy for me to hit create, go ahead and scale that out. And if I want to go and fine-tune those values, I can always come into the data in the background and do that. So tools that are making it really easy for me to be able to get my job done and actually be more productive quicker than I have been before. Now, the next stuff I'm going to move into is PowerPoint. PowerPoint is beautiful, and if you've read the Office blogs, you know what I'm going to do, and I apologize if you know, just don't ruin it for everyone else.
Ben and his planets presentation. Every week in a team meeting, planets.
Hey, the planets are important. Planets are important. You know there's like a rover on Mars? You had no idea, did you? But here I've got a planets presentation, and let's actually go and show you what I used to show these guys regularly. And I'm going to come up to here and hit F5. Now, how many people see decks like this? Yep, next
All
slide,
the time, yeah.
Next slide, next slide, every week.
Which one's next, Ben?
That one's not up there. but what we have here is this new transition called Morph. And Morph is actually more than just a single transition, because what it does is it takes the objects that are on my slides and actually makes this great transition between each slide, really creating an engaging experience for the people that are seeing that presentation. So I'm going to go and select my slides and select Morph, and I don't want to give it away just yet, so now we're ready to go. I'm going to hit F5 on this again. So we saw what this looked like originally, which was... Start that again. Come on. We saw what this looked like originally, which was just a flick between slides, right? All I've done here is assigned a single transition, and now, as I go between my slides, I have these really great transitions that go through. It's looked at the objects within my PowerPoint presentation, figured out their next locations, and then gone and created animations for me as part of that. No more me putting in motion paths and doing those kind of things. PowerPoint's actually taking care of all of this. And the beauty of this is a feature that ships only to Office 365 customers. So one of the things we announced last week was that we will be shipping new features to Office every month. And this is one of the first features we'll be shipping as part of that. So for those out there who are running the perpetual version of Office 2016, when we get to 6 months from now, that'll look very different from the users who are running Office 365 Pro Plus. And as we get to 12 months from now, the perpetual version of Office 2016 will look vastly different to what we have in Office 365 Pro Plus. And that's because we'll be shipping features like this every month just out to the users so they can have new ways to get new presentations, but also new insights and things like that into their information and into their products. So really, creating great experiences for users out of that.
Yeah, the notion of a feature like this is really because we see more and more we're reaching the kind of peak or the end point of what you see is what you get. What you see is what you get. WYSIWYG, we've been using this a lot for Office. It's kind of when we first moved to the Windows model, that was really the focus of Office, that you could create a document so perfect that no matter what your creativity and imagination was, that was the only limits to what the documents you look like would be. Now I think we've reached peak creativity and imagination. People just don't have the time to focus on building motion paths and all this rich stuff. People generally kind of suck when it comes to choosing fonts and colors and those sorts of things. And we've got
or
to
you
the
just
stage.
Waste a whole day. Yeah. I've spent probably 8 hours building
just
transition
on fonts
paths.
And colors.
Yeah. Just on fonts and colors.
There's so
it's
many.
Important.
Yeah. And so being able to outsource that to the cloud, to a machine learning algorithm to kind of pick the things that look better to make those transitions work is a really interesting feature. You'll see more and more of that through Office 365, and that's why some of these features come to Office 365 first, because there's an entire Azure cloud behind the scenes here computing a lot of those models that are required.
Yeah.
And it's different than just adding in animations. If you go into the animation pane, you're not going to see all of these animations show up. It's not it's not simply doing the work for you, it's changing the way that the work is done.
Now, the other area is that we've done a lot of work. We spend a lot of time. How many people here are still emailing? How many people are emailing right now? Okay. I love the fact that every hand went up. They're like,
it's
yes,
whenever you start talking. Exchange servers load goes up.
It's good. It's usage. We want
with
usage,
analytics,
right?
We could see how effective everybody in here is being.
Now, we all use email, and even though we have those great share dialogues in Word, and we have the same share dialogue in here in PowerPoint as well, the truth is, if I was to say to you, go and share this, what you'd end up doing is going to your email and sharing it with someone via email. And so we thought about the fact that, let's not change the way people work. Let's meet people where they are and actually give them tools that help them, share things more effectively. And so I have this email I'm going to send to Katie J here, and I actually want to go and share that document with her. And you'll notice that as I click my Attach Items dialog, first thing is I get a list of all of the recent documents I've been working on. Now, this alone saves me so much time every day because I no longer have to try and hunt through my OneDrive. I don't hunt through the directory sitting on my C drive. And it doesn't matter what I'm sharing here. You can see I've got a combination of pictures and Word documents and Excel and PowerPoint, both sitting in the cloud and also sitting on my PC. So it helps me really, when I want to write a document and go share that with Al, it's a much quicker way to do it rather than having to hunt through for things.
These are my favorite type of features. They're the features where you see it for the first time and you think, why didn't I always do that? So that's where you know that the feature's really good. It's kind of intuitive, it's easy to use, and it roams across devices. So if you were working on a document on one PC, and then on your laptop, on your phone, on a tablet, you can see those across yep. devices through here.
And I guess the other beauty is, too, is that if I'm sharing something from the cloud, for example, like this Fabricam future printing proposal, that's when the network actually goes and does its thing. It goes in and it feels and looks like an attachment. It actually looks like I've attached a document to the email, but what I've got here is a link off to that document sitting in OneDrive. And as Al said, this smart kind of features where simply putting Katie J in the email actually grants her access to that document, means that I don't have to worry about sending this through and having her come back to me and say, I don't have access to that, can you grant me access to the link, and have to go back and do that again. I do also have control as well, so if I want to go and actually lock this down and say Katie only has the ability to edit or has the ability to view and edit and do whatever she needs to do, I can always go and lock that down as well. So really, really great experiences for me, right here with her in the email and working the way I work as opposed to, trying to change what I do day in, day out and meeting me where I'm at. Now, as we think about collaboration and also other areas that we've made improvements within the Office suite is the concept of groups and a feature we call Office 365 Groups. We have a lot of products out there today that we use for bringing a team together and collaborating together. Things like Yammer, distribution list, file shares, SharePoint team sites.
Public folders.
public folders, USB keys. All those kind of things come together to help a team work together. And Office 365 Groups is a new feature we released, which really looked at targeting that. Because all of these other kind of services we've had today are really IT dependent. You know, a lot of the ways, you know, things like SharePoint have been deployed today. If I want a SharePoint site, I actually need to go to my admin to get permission to create a site. I'm assigned 5 meg on that site, and which doesn't help me when I get a document that's bigger than that. You know, all these kind of, you know, rules and restrictions get put in place.
Needless planet shots, high-res photos of Mars.
Hey, dude, that's where the aliens are. So, you know, Groups is really a way around, you know, to help create an environment where I can pull a team together effectively, taking advantage of what we call this Hollywood model, where I can bring a group of people together to solve an issue and work on something in one place rather than needing to, you know, get IT buy-in to help me set up the infrastructure I need. And so what I have a list, what I have here is a list of all the groups I have within Office 365. And I've got this Coho sales group. And you'll notice it looks a little different from email, even though it sits within Outlook. Email, I have my most recent, you know, mail at the top, whereas this is really focused around a conversation. I can see information that's come through, I can respond to messages, I can like messages. It's a very social experience. And this has all been created simply by me creating a group. Now, the other thing that having groups creates is this area where we can store things centrally. So let me come back up to this here. So you'll notice in my ribbon up the top here, I've got my conversations, I've got a shared calendar, a shared file space, and also a shared notebook that we can all work together on. So as I'm pulling a team together for a project, I can simply create a group, get my team together, just to post some messages, post the documents we're working on and my milestones and those kind of things into my calendar, and it's all there in one place for everyone. Now, let's say Al and I start a group and bring Marissa in a week later. The beauty is that unlike a DL or other areas, all of that history is pulled down as well. So we don't have to spend time digging out the important messages and the things that Marissa needs to know. She just gets access to everything that's there the moment she joins that group. So a really effective way to build on that teams and networks you know, pillar and really help bring people together.
And this is another one of those features that doesn't belong to a particular product or a particular app, right? It's part of, you know, using the best bits of Exchange in terms of calendaring and mail store, using the best bits of SharePoint in terms of document management, the best bits of project through task management, and bringing those all together into that one place, which is something that if you were trying to replicate this in an on-premises environment, you'd need to make sure your SharePoint is up to date, it's the same version of your Exchange server, the same version of Outlook, the same version of project, and it kind of becomes this kind of unwieldy mess of like upgrading all these things at the same time just to get this integrated experience.
Yeah, definitely. So, but it's not just about being on a PC as well, right? One of the things that, how many people are, you know, running an iPhone? I won't tell you off, I'm about to demo on one. Cool.
Three hands.
Three hands? Cool. Yeah. I'm guessing that still that we're not making.
Yeah, this is a Nokia audience.
There's a Nokia audience, that's it.
Didn't you see the hands for 5110? How many people are running a 5110? More than iPhones, right?
So, one of the things we think about today, we are all very, very mobile. And so, I've just shown you groups on the PC, but the beauty is that that experience also follows me when I come to my mobile device as well. So we have a Groups app that now runs on all our mobile platforms. It's very easy for me to then go back to that exact same Coho sales group and see all of those conversations and things that are happening right there, right on my mobile device. So it doesn't matter where I am, I still have access to all of that information in a secure fashion as well. So I have my I have all my messages, I have my files, everything I need is right there available for me to access. And the beauty is that when we think about, you know, being mobile on the go and being able to work on things, historically this is stuff that's been locked out from the IT admin staff. But with the new features that we have with EMS and the things you would have seen this morning from Brad, you know, being able to make sure that device is secure and that endpoint is secure while still also, you know, allowing me to keep my personal information on there, it's just some of the things that roll into that great cloud experience. Mm. Now, we think about that as well as probably the biggest area of leaks, and we've seen, you know, news in the past with, you know, things like the Sony debacle and those kind of things where mail got leaked out and people got phished. You know, protecting an environment and protecting a user while they're on their device and email is actually really key. And so I have here Outlook on iOS, still the number one mail app on the marketplace at the moment, with things like swipe gestures to be able to triage my email, you know, really personal approach for me to
colors,
be able to work.
Yeah.
Colors as well.
Nice, yeah.
Colors as well.
What about yellow?
Yellow's there.
Is there a green?
Not on this one. Not on these swipe gestures. But also keeping me safe as I'm working with my email as well. So Marissa here is all about cheap flights. She flew here
all day,
you know,
every day.
Next to the chickens in the hold. And she sent me this email about a site that is giving cheap flights. Now the thing is when this email came through, it was safe. It was a completely legitimate link that was provided in this. However, the user behind the scenes or the person who's provided this email is actually a phishing attacker, and he's changed the link after the fact. And this is where, if I go ahead and click this link, Office 365 has actually come in my stead and actually said, you know what, I'm inspecting that link as Ben's clicked it and realized using the advanced threat protection engine that it's actually unsafe, even though it's been changed after it's got through the firewall. And so it's protecting me the moment I click that link, no matter where I am, from going to a site that is potentially going to steal my details.
And this is a new type of attack. We've seen phishing for quite a while now. We have tools, the transport layer to protect against phishing and those sorts of things. But this is protecting against a whole new type of attack, which is something that can get through the transport layer, and then it's a website. You can change a website. It changes it after the fact to something malicious. And so here what the transport layer is doing is it's checking those links in real time.
Yeah. And it's actually on a per link inspection as well. So if I do go ahead and hit that Bing link because I want to find flight somewhere else, you notice I'm actually allowed to go through to that. That's a safe link and that's actually gone through and
malicious.
Got me through to Bing. It's not malicious.
Okay.
It's not malicious. It's a safe place. Now, it's not just about that as well. Like, this is about protecting people's creds from being compromised. We also want to protect information from getting out of the organization as well. And you can see here I have this email from Al. This has got some information on the CR227 product overview. This is
our Taylor Swift branded lip balm.
That's it.
Okay.
Very, very secret.
Yep.
Very secret.
Been working on that one, trying to get the rights.
Now, Al's actually put some IRM protection on this. Now, this is something that historically we've never been able to open on a mobile device. We actually released this update for the iOS app, I want to say about 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. Where now what you can actually do is open those rights protected messages on your phone in a safe manner. And you can see very easily the permissions that Al has assigned to me on this email. I don't have the ability to export, extract, forward, modify the recipients, or print this email. But I can go ahead and read it and get access to that. And you'll notice as well is that the app's gone and honored all of those permissions that have been given to me. So I have no ability to go and forward this off to anyone else. I only have the ability to be able to go and respond to Al on this as part of that. So ways that are protecting information from getting outside the organization when I'm on the go, as well as protecting me from compromising my credentials.
This notion of sandboxing the app is quite important as well. We've had mobile device management software and all sorts of software that's put this sandbox around the entire operating system. But the problem with that is you end up not really using an iPhone. You're using like a good phone in the shape of an iPhone, or you're using some other system, and it gives you these kind of not great apps. What we're focusing on here is building the app first and putting the protection in the app itself so that you can manage the app. As an IT person, you don't care if the user's using Angry Birds or not. There's not a good chance of sensitive data leaking through Angry Birds, at least that I'm aware of yet. But for Word, you want to put protections on that. You want to restrict Word, but not the other apps, and give the user flexibility to use the device that they want, in many cases they own, but protect the content that belongs to you and belongs to the organization on that phone as well.
And I do have to call out Ben for not having a realistic phone up here, because there's no Instagram, no Snapchat. Those are the real reasons people use iPhones.
We already told him he's not a real millennial. So.
Yeah. He doesn't know.
Yeah.
Young whippersnapper upstart. All right, so with that though, let's have now hand back to Marissa and actually talk about how, all of these experiences we showed you today were all built off Office 365. So what I'm going to do is hand back to Marissa and she starts to talk about how you can actually get to these experiences and actually get to Office 365 in your own organization.
So I'm here to start talking about myself again and plugging my fast track session, which is happening this Thursday. I'm here to talk more in depth about Microsoft Fast Track and about getting you to Office 365, because historically we've had a lot of our customers, purchase and have these licenses that are sitting there and people aren't using, and that's the worst story that I like to hear. It's like when we hear stories about people using the same features in Word and PowerPoint that they've always been there, or that have been there since 2003 and they're using the same functionality. It's the same concept when it comes to our products and services. We want you to be on the latest and greatest, and we want to be able to get you there. So what Fast Track is all about enabling our users. It's really an enablement service or a customer success service, which is how it's positioned here. It's about providing you the resources, the tools, the guidance, and actual physical people to help get you onboarded onto Office 365, as well as other services. This is not just Office Fast Track, this is Microsoft Fast Track. And then about moving forward and using the service and helping you get value out of it from an organizational level, an IT level, and an end user level. So it's about getting you there and then getting you using. And when we talk about usage, we're not talking about quick fixes. We're not talking about sending out emails to your users and letting them know about the latest and greatest features on PowerPoint and here's how to use them. It's about driving sustainable adoption within the organization. So Fast Track is not only your enablement service to get you onto Office 365 and deploying you and migrating your mail and getting you up on the latest and greatest. It's about providing you the services to get you adopted onto Office 365, so at an organizational level and then your end users. And that's about telling real stories. So making Office 365 real to our users, like Alistair and Ben were mentioning, is all about helping them understand how this is going to change my life. How is it going to change the way that I work? Is it going to save me time? Is it going to make my work better? What does that actually mean? What does running more effective meetings actually mean, and what does that entail? So we use these very in-depth, real usage scenarios to help you drive usage of particular workloads, and then usage across the entire suite. So you can see, for example, run more effective meetings. That's something that at an organizational level we all want to do. I would love to have an extremely effective meeting. I don't want a meeting there where everybody's taking separate notes and people are sending emails at the same time and nobody's able to join unless they're in the same location. So this scenario and through Fast Track and the resources and people that we provide you, it's about helping your organization adopt that scenario and run that scenario in your within your groups. So as you can see there, the hero workload here that this is really driving usage for is Skype for Business, but it's certainly not Skype for Business exclusive. And the same with all of the other workloads. Working like a network, your Yammer is probably going to be a big player there if you're a customer with Yammer. But working like a network is certainly not Yammer exclusive, and that's the point that we're trying to drive. So there's a couple of different things that I would recommend from a deployment and usage standpoint. Go to my session on Thursday at 9. It's Thursday.
Today's Tuesday.
It's on Thursday at 9:45. And during that session, we're actually going to be talking to real Fast Track engineers and learning about customer stories to people who have gone through Fast Track, learning about the service. Fast Track is not simply a concept. It's not just a bunch of resources. It's actually a service benefit when you buy Office 365. Has anybody here ever heard of Fast Track or have an idea about what it is? Great. Fast Track's been around for quite a while, and it's changed a lot. It was introduced a couple of years ago, around 2013, as a deployment methodology. It was simply us understanding that we had the resources and the knowledge to help our users deploy Office 365, but our users didn't necessarily have that. So it was about providing people, checklists and knowledge and learning about what it takes to get from A to B, and has since evolved into something that's much bigger than deployment and much bigger than just providing you with some information. It's a service benefit. When you buy Office 365, we're going to get you there. It doesn't matter what it takes. We're going to get you to where you need to be. I'm going to talk all about the trial experience that you get with Office 365. This is not just something that's going to light up after a customer is purchased. There's Office 365 and Fast Track benefits that you can see within the Fast Track program that light up even before you're a customer. So get a tenant, get into the Fast Track trial experience. There's a lot more there. Familiarizing yourself with those 365 usage scenarios. We have a lovely website that illustrates all of those points and more. And get connected with your partner, because the partner play here, within Fast Track is not separate at all. We have the Fast Track Center. We have resources for you, but this is not a partner replacement. This is a partner enhancement, and it's nurturing that relationship between partners and the value that they're providing you and the services that we can provide you for free with Fast Track.
So You know, I think Fast Track's quite an interesting concept. It's one of many things, and hopefully, you know, as you see Office 365 more and more, you realize that we're not treating Office 365 like a product that you buy. It's not something that we just build and ship over the fence, but it really is a service, and a service is something that we do, not something that we just build. And it's a mixture of technology, but also people and processes behind the scenes. And Fast Track's an example of the people and process aspects behind Office 365 that you get as a subscriber as well. It's not just the technology running in the service. Another cool aspect of the people side is our Office 365 network. A show of hands, who's on the Office 365 network? Anyone? A couple of hands? Anna down the front here runs the Office 365 network, so make sure you say hello to Anna. It is a virtual network, which means that you can hang out in the network all you like, but it's rare you get the chance to have a beer, except on Wednesday. So we have a very sensible, responsible happy hour that we're hosting on Wednesday, 7 p.m. We'd love to see you all there as well. There will be beverages. We'll be celebrating prizes. Not being in Seattle in November and hanging out with you prizes. Guys. And there will be prizes. There'll be great, awesome prizes. Anna's spending a lot of money on prizes. It's going to be awesome. A lot of drinks.
If you're disappointed, direct all of your feedback to Anna.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you very much for listening. This is just the first session. We have a heap more sessions to go. Session eval is very important because they don't let us back in the country if we don't get great scores. We have drinks tomorrow night. If we don't get good scores, we won't have drinks tomorrow night. Right, Anna? Yeah, we're going to cancel that. And if you give us good scores, we'll also give you a comic book, The Incredible Office Deployment. It's funny, but it also makes you think. So definitely check that out. We have a bunch of more sessions coming throughout the week. Right up next is Christoph Feisinger from Seattle via France, talking about the rise of dynamic teams and groups. Tomorrow I'll be talking about Windows 10 and Office 2016. We have sessions on migration to Office 365, developer tools with Office 365, network performance, what's new in security and compliance, adoption, how to drive those adoption scenarios inside of your organization to get the most out of Office 365, Fast Track, of course, and of course, Office 365 Pro Plus, my pet favorite product that you'll all be hearing lots more about. So with that, thank you very much for your time. Out the front for any questions that you have, and remember, grab a comic, give good scores. It's a great, happy, healthy circle of life.